My name is Scott Fleming. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, everybody. I want to thank David and everybody else that helped organize this for this wonderful event. I've had the opportunity to come out and be a part of things like this all over the world, and usually out there listening, and it's a wonderful thing, to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm honored. It gives me great pleasure, and I'm honored to be here, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous with all my heart, so I'm humbled. I'm not going to get into the, I introduced myself as a recovered alcoholic. I think Jonathan's going to handle that after me. Let me say this, is that the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous has never lied to me. Everything that it said will come true has come true in my life and continues to. And anything that's good in my life, and I've been blessed. I have an abundant life since I got here. February 13th, that just passed, I celebrated 10 years without a drink. And that's not way to go, Scott. That's way to go, God, and way to go, Alcoholics Anonymous. But I haven't wanted to drink in 9.5 years. And that's a miracle for a guy like me, because from the moment it hit my lips at the age of 14 years old, I was transformed. And I was connected to the universe. I don't know if I knew how disconnected I was until alcohol hit my lips. And I would chase that feeling of being okay in this world by drinking for many, many years. And it would eventually take me to my knees 10 years ago. I was in rehab at 18 years old just for drinking. 29 days sober, I went to college. I was offered a college scholarship to play tennis in North Carolina. And on the 30th day of me not drinking, my parents drove away, and someone asked me the wrong question. You want some beer? And I said, yeah, give me a six-pack of Bud Pounders. And I drank that, and I remember thinking when it hit me and the feeling came on, what was I doing not drinking for 29 days? This is the best feeling in the world. And I would drink myself right out of college in a year and a half and never play one match of tennis. And I would come home, and I come from a wonderful family. They're the most non-judgmental people I've ever met. And they gave me a great education and all the love you could want. And they didn't spoil me. And I have a brother that's a year and a half younger who I abused my whole life to make myself feel better. And I carried that shame at Alcoholics Anonymous. And a sister that's 10 years younger that watched me grow up in a house at times and take that house hostage and be abusive in that household. And that was something I didn't want to do, because I loved my sister. When she was born, I fell in love with her, and I wanted to be the big brother, and I never could. And what happened for me was after coming home, I picking up that drink and coming home, 10 more years, I would live meaningless and purposeless. And I don't think the war stories are that important, because they may be different, but, it was meaningless and purposeless. Like, I was alone. I hated myself. I felt shame like I can't describe. I would take my parents hostage throughout my 20s, and they would ask me to please leave. And I would bounce around on friends' couches. I would get apartments and then have the utilities shut off. And then the landlord knocked on my door, and I could never live the way other people seem to be able to live. And at the end, I wanted to kill myself. I wanted to kill myself at 29 years old. I thought I was schizophrenic. I really did. And I went to the doctors, and I was on meds and everything. I'd been to the doctors my whole life. And that wasn't the answer. Not that there's anything wrong with schizophrenia. I just didn't have it. I had untreated alcoholism, and there was a way up and a way out, and I didn't know that. So I'm brought to my knees at 29 years old because I couldn't kill myself, begging for help. And that rehab came to mind. I called the rehab, and I went in. I didn't want to come to AA. I'm sorry, I didn't want to go to inpatient. I wanted outpatient. And they gave me that. And I'm going 4 to 9, and I'm feeling safe. And they told me about Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was a requirement. But I didn't want to go, because I already knew what you guys were about. It was a bunch of old people hanging on real tight. If you make it through the day without a drink, you win. And that didn't sound like any fun to me. I couldn't imagine being around people in a social setting without drinking, having fun. But they gave me an ultimatum, and I was afraid to not be a part of that group, so I walked into the Greater Levittown Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is my home group, and I'm an active member today, and I sat on that back wall, and I listened to a guy, and he spoke. He had about 12, 13 years, and he sounded relatively happy, and he drank like I did, and more importantly, I believed him. And afterwards, people came up to me and shook my hand and welcomed me. And I fell in love with the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous from the moment I walked in these doors, and I haven't fallen out of love with it. I've fallen deeper in love every day. I know that's not everybody's experience. I was leaving that clubhouse that night thinking, I can't wait to come back tomorrow. And the guy coming up was complaining about having to come to these meetings to stay sober. That wasn't my experience. And I came back every day. There was meetings. I couldn't work. I was out of my mind. So I was. There was meetings 9, noon, 5:30, 8, and midnight. And I'm showing up early. I'm staying late. I'm talking to the long-timers. I'm listening during the meeting. I got involved right away with the fellowship. I did everything the fellowship asked except 12 things. I became the integral rep right away. So I'm in service. I'm setting up coffee. I'm setting up chairs. I'm chairing meetings. I'm speaking. I got a pocket full of guys' numbers. And we're going to the diners afterwards and the restaurants and talking about the wonderful things we heard in meetings and how our lives might change. I left our females alone. There was men in there that showed me that example, and I knew I wasn't there for that, that I was a dead man walking. I better pay attention here. I had nothing to offer. And my life got real good real quick on the outside. I don't know what your dreams are, but I've always had them, and I still have them. And I became a hero to my mom and dad 2 weeks sober, and they wanted me to live with them and not leave. They're showing me off to the family. You know, my eyes are looking better, my skin color is looking better, you know, and the girlfriend that cut me off, the hostage that cut me off 8 months earlier is calling me up. I couldn't get her to answer the phone or anything. And I always wanted to travel my whole life. It was always in me. My brother, I watched him work hard and travel the world and backpack across Europe. My mom is a teacher. She saved her money and in the summers traveled the world with her friends and her teachers. And I could never get off the bar stool. I was too afraid to live. And I was envious and hated people that seemed successful in life. And my brother says, let's go to Ireland. So 6 months, 5 months sober, we started planning this trip to Ireland. And in the clubhouse of our, in the closet of in our clubhouse, there was a meeting list of all the meetings in Ireland. And I knew that was a sign to go. So we start planning this trip, and I go to Ireland for 10 days, 6 months sober. And I fly into Shannon, I get off, and I realize right away this is going to be hard. The second day, I'm in, I think, Donegal, and I'm thinking, I was in the Ring of Curry. I'm thinking, why can't I have a few beers with my brother? Why can't I? Third day in, I make a conscious decision. I'm going to drink before this is over. I'm going to drink. Fourth day in, we end up in a restaurant/pub. My brother orders a beer, and I want to drink so bad it hurts. And I would have drank if it wasn't for him. But I abused him my whole life, and he knew I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had heard in AA, at some point in your sobriety, the only thing between you and a drink will be God. And I said to my brother, Will, I got to get out of here. And we went to our bed and breakfast, and I went into the bathroom, I closed the door, and I put a towel down the crack of the door. And for the first time in my life, I got on my knees, and I said, God, I want to drink, but I don't want to drink. Please help me. And I didn't drink. But what's more is I came out of that bathroom and I didn't want to drink anymore. It had been taken from me. Now, I think I like drinking more than anyone ever did on the face of the earth. And anytime it called me, I answered the call every day. And even when I was in my late 20s, I remember walking to the bar crying my eyes out like a baby because I didn't want to go, but I had to. And I even fly to Glasgow and go to Edinburgh alone. I'm walking around the streets of Edinburgh, and the bar lights are flashing, which to me are the most attractive things in the world. And I don't want to go in. There was no pull. There was no I wish I could. And I fly back to Dublin. He had already been to Edinburgh, so he wanted to spend more time in Dublin. And I board the plane, and I fly home. Now, I'm interested in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous because something happened to me. I had it with me. I wasn't reading it much. I was making meetings over there, too. And on the way home, I opened up We Agnostics, and the first line said, my eyes saw were either God's everything or he's nothing. He either is or he isn't what your choice to be. And I knew he was. And I knew I would be okay for the rest of my life if I depended on God. That's all I ever really wanted, was to feel okay. Alcohol came close, but it wasn't real. And I knew with everything in my being that this was real. And this other thought came to me, this intuitive thought, or this inspirational thought. It said, when you get off that plane, go see that man that when he was coming into meetings, you were attracted to him. You loved when he shared. You liked the way he walked. Something about him. But you were afraid of him at the same time. There was a guy trying to sponsor me in that meeting, and I wasn't letting him. But there's another man that I'm speaking of who I really was attracted to. But I was afraid of him. And if you got to know me, you wouldn't like me. And I wasn't worthy. I wasn't doing any of this work, so I knew you could see right through me. But I knew I had to go see this man, so I sat next. What I did was I got back to my meeting, and I moved myself closer to him. Within 2 weeks, I'm sitting right next to him. And he said to me one night, "Do you want me to sponsor you or something?" And I said, I never thought you'd ask, John. And, you know, asking a man to be your sponsor is like asking another man to be your Valentine. It is not easy. And my journey began. And that man sat me down, and like a little kid, I followed him. And I did everything the big book says to do with him. And I did it in fear, and I did it in doubt, but I did it. And I trusted him a little bit, and everything came true for me in the big book. And I healed. And here's what happened for me. I started to do things I didn't think were a good idea, like get on my knees with another man. Horrible idea, but I did it. And that's what's great for a guy like me. Going into a park and talking about these things about me for the first time, the shameful things, the fears with another man, does not look like a good idea to me. But I did it. And, something happened to me that day. I'm in there, and he's showing me things I can't see about me. Like, I like to feel superior over people. And then I'm not. I'm just one of. And he would say things to me, like, in that park, like, "Scott, why would people want to be around you?" And I said, "I don't know, maybe if I'm funny." And he said, "No, why would they really want to be around you?" He said, how about if you're honest? And he had me. I was not honest my whole life. I lied to you. I exaggerated from the time I came into this world. I had to be around you. I told you stories, made up things so that you would think I was something I wasn't. We had a long conversation. And on the way out of that park, you know, he said something. He said to me, "Scott, I'm your friend. I'm here if you need me, but I'm fallible. I'm human. God is infallible, all powerful, infinite wisdom and knowledge. That is the most important relationship in your life." It's what Sam Shoemaker told Bill Wilson. He said, when you see the man with the problem, put his hand in the hand of him who has all the answers and go home. Don't stick around and play God. And he told me to go home and take that hour, and I did. And in that hour, I did the formal things the book says to do. And I felt silly doing them and saying them, but I did them. And somewhere in an hour, as I reflected on that, what we talked about in the park and my life and the truth about me, I knew alcohol was no longer the answer for me, and God was. I felt a presence that is hard to explain, and I haven't wanted to drink from that moment to this moment. The shame melted away, and I haven't felt shame since. I've had a peace at my core that hasn't left me from that moment to this, even when the storms of life show up. And I was given purpose, and Alcoholics Anonymous worked in my heart that day exactly the way they said it would. And I left that hour at my mom and dad's home, and I went to a meeting that night. And I'm looking at this girl, Elena's eyes, and for the first time in my life, I'm looking at another human being's eyes. I don't want to leave them. If I was ever around you before that, I had to hang my head. Or if I was in your eyes, I felt very uncomfortable. And I was staring I was right there with her. And then something really amazing happened to me that night. I took a guy home that I always had spent time with for the 6 months in AA I had been there. And I had always been kind to him, or I'd buy him, like, he was way less fortunate than me. And I would buy him lunch, or I'd take him to a meeting, or I would hang out with him. But I had nothing real in the way of AA to offer him, because I wasn't taking your program. I wasn't doing any work. But now I did. And it showed up in this way. I said, "Bill, do you have a sponsor on the way home?" Because I wanted him to experience what I just did that day. And he said, "Yeah, you." And I said, "Well, I'll take you as far as I can, Bill." And the next day, Bill and I were looking at the first three steps together. And I'm on my knees with another man. And a couple weeks later, I enter into a park with him. And I leave that park with tears rolling down my cheeks. Because for the first time in my life, I was unconditionally in love with another human being. I would have given up anything that I had acquired at that point materially, and I had been given a lot, for this man to know that God is real, for him to know he's forgiven. I would have spent as much time as it took in that park for Bill to know that he doesn't ever have to drink again, for him to have a purpose much like I did with him in that park that day. And from that moment to this moment, that has been my primary purpose. That is why I come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, Bill talks about it in A Vision for You, and it's come true in my life that, yes, I do need meetings to stay sober, and I do need, you know, commitments and everything to stay sober, but that's not the motive anymore. That becomes secondary. It's transcended by this new motive. the way I feel when I'm of use to others, the happiness and joy it gives me. So I come back to Alcoholics Anonymous from that moment to this moment to give away, to offer, if you want it, or share in a meeting about the good news, about what happened to me, that I know God's real, and that He forgives me and loves me, and I don't want to drink anymore. I became a free man. I've been a free man from that moment to this moment. And I cared. I was on my eighth step, and I had a lot of hard amends to make, ones I really didn't know if I could face. The personal ones, you know, like my brother, who I abused my whole life, was never the big brother. And Bill was catching up to me. And I cared enough about Bill to try to stay ahead of him. So I prayed for the willingness. And I prayed for the willingness. And I prayed and prayed and prayed for the willingness of these hard amends that I didn't know if I could go face. And I knew it was time. And I called my brother up and I stayed one step ahead of Bill so that I could be there for him and guide him through. And I went and made those amends with my brother. And I'll tell you this, as I started to make that amends with my brother, I mean, I was crying my eyes, I couldn't even talk, you know, and I settled down, we had a beautiful conversation, and my relationship with my brother started that day, even though I wasn't hurting him and not drinking for many months. And my brother called me up a few months later and asked me to take him through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he's not an alcoholic. And he's well adjusted to life. And I look up to him the way he lives. And he's a history teacher. So we sat down on Sundays, he gave me a history lesson for a couple hours. I start with the history of AA, and by the way, he loves the history of AA. He knows more about the history of AA than most people do in AA. And I listened to his fifth step right where I did the direct formal amends with my brother in his apartment. And he didn't have a lot of names because he had lived life pretty, you know, pretty good. And he could see, though, from looking at a few of the names, looking at it from a different angle, he could see, you know, where he was selfish or inconsiderate or fearful. And what happened was there was one name that had to go to the 8-step list. His ex-girlfriend from 12 years ago from North Jersey, who he harmed and left, you know, left her and hurt her. And I said to him, you know, Will, at some point you're going to have to make this right. Now, I didn't tell him to go find her because he's not going to drink and die if he doesn't, you know. He's not an alcoholic. But what happened was a few months later, I got a text message, ran into Sarah at the Austin airport, made amends incredible. And I called my brother up, and he's visiting my sister down in Austin, and he's walking through the airport. His flight gets delayed, and he locks eyes with the one person on his nice step list, Sarah. And he's with his wife, the woman he left his girl for, and she's with her brother. They go to the bathroom at the same time, and he's prepared to do what he had to do. And he made his amends. And he said, Scott, it's the best thing I ever did in my life. He told my mother that night he physically felt different. And she forgave him. My brother was free. My brother lives in New Zealand now. I was just over there, and we were sitting and talking a couple months ago. And he said, yeah, I have to go make amends to my sister-in-law next week. I already set it up. My brother's not an Alcoholics Anonymous, but he's living by these principles. It's enriching his life and those lives around him. And that's, to me, what this is all about. You know, my ultimate target in here is to be of maximum use to God and my fellows. So I go to, I have purpose now. I never had purpose my whole life. The moment I do the work Alcoholics Anonymous says to do, I have purpose. I'm uniquely crafted to help another alcoholic who suffers like me, who knows what it's like to be alone, to be afraid, to suffer and want to kill yourself, to hate yourself. Oh, I know what that's like. I've been blessed in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I've been all over the world. My dreams of travel have come true. I've been to 32 countries in the last 6 years. 95% of that has been inside Alcoholics Anonymous. Whether I'm in service in AA around the world or I'm showing up at a convention, participating and listening. I have many heroes and many mentors in AA. Some are in the room today who I love and I listen to and I learn from, and I've been blessed. And I flew over to Portugal in October to be the godfather of a friend of mine's son in AA, and the ceremony was over there. And I flew into Madrid and I thought, I'm going to go see this, you know, south of Spain and travel through there. And while I'm there, it's only a 45-minute ferry to Morocco, Africa. So I do that. And I don't recommend traveling there alone. I was supposed to go with my friend. He backed out. So I did that. And I end up in the desert, in the Sahara Desert for 3 days, sleeping under stars with nomads on camels. And as I'm in there, like the first day I'm in there, or second day maybe I'm in there, this Moroccan man, 25-year-old Moroccan man, is traveling through with his wife and 5-month-old baby. And we stop, we start talking. Now, it's very hard for me not to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous because it's my whole life. My life is Alcoholics Anonymous. I have no life without it. And I feel like I cannot give back enough ever. But I try. I talk a little bit about my life, and his wife looks over at me and says, "Is this like a change in consciousness thing?" I said, "Yeah, it is kind of like that." And he looks up at me and looks in my eyes and says, "I can't stop drinking. I can stop for 2 months and I drink again." And they got a 5-month-old baby there. And they don't have, he's never heard of AA. And I don't think they have AA in Morocco. If they did, I didn't see it. I tried to make meetings over there. I couldn't find it. And I end up taking him through the first 3 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he understands it. It's amazing. And we're talking about spiritual principles, and I see the hope in his eyes, and we exchange emails and get to stay in contact. And here, I think I'm going into the Sahara Desert to be adventurous, to go have fun, and which I did, but God will use me anywhere I go, anywhere. That's been my experience. I had the honor to go to speak on the history in the Bali Convention, and it's an honor for me because I love AA. And I got to go around, and I end up in the Prince of Bali, and we're having tea with the Prince of Bali. I'm there with some of my heroes in AA, and the Prince is talking about how his son is a suffering alcoholic. And in their culture, they don't believe in don't enable. They stick with the family until the death, no matter what. And I'm listening, and he's in this traditional garb sitting there. I can't even believe I'm sitting here with the Prince of Bali, and I end up having to go to the bathroom, and the bathroom was, we're on the royal grounds, and the bathroom's over there, and I go over there, and I hear this voice, "Hey, you." I look over, and there's this guy in the shadows, and he's drinking. I can see he's drinking something. I go over there, and I realize this is the son. I didn't realize he was on the ground. None of us did. And he starts talking to me, and I talk to him. And I don't preach to anybody about this stuff. I believe what the Franciscan monk said: preach the gospel with your life. And I just tell him about my life and how good it is and why it's so good, And he starts talking to me and asking about Alcoholics Anonymous and why we're here and all this. And I end up walking around for an hour with him. And he's showing me his artwork, and I can see he's getting a little bit of hope and interested in what it is we're doing. And I eventually have to go, and I get together with the group, and we leave, and the tour guide comes running out and says, "Hey, Scott, Tunjay is now interested in Alcoholics Anonymous. He's going to go to a meeting with us tomorrow night." And I got his email. And this is the kind of stuff. Now, I'm a guy that 10 years ago I was virtually homeless with no meaning and no purpose in my life. And I get to travel around the world, and just by, and I didn't, anything I have in my life, I did not go after. I gave myself to this program and try to continue to do that. And all sorts of things happen. Doors fly open. People show up. Money shows up. Unbelievable things, And I've been committed to my primary purpose the whole time. This thing to me, and my sponsor never had to say, "Scott, who are you helping?" Never once. Because I think if you have the experience, in my case, it's been that the experience wants to keep having itself. And if it's in my heart, I'm going to want to sit down. Even if I don't want to sit down, I'm going to want to sit down with somebody. Because through the whole time, and I'm fortunate. I'm one of the fortunate people the book talks about that get to devote all their time to the work. In some capacity, I am in the lives of 130 alcoholics daily in some capacity. And I sponsored many of them for the last 9 years. And that's a blessing. That's a blessing for a guy like me. And I've studied working with others and the chapters that follow that deal with our 12 step. And yes, I believe, at first I remember reading that and thinking, "Oh, well, this is when they wrote the book back in, the standard answer. They wrote this book back in the 30s. They want to get out to Nebraska and no one knew." But you know what? I've been put in situations where people have not heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like my mother calling me out with a teacher's son who's 12 or 14 or 15, never heard of AA or anything. And I have to go into the home. And I found the things that they, from their experience, the strategies on how to reach somebody are effective. You know, and I often think of our history about Bill Wilson and how amazing it is. You know, about how this all came about. And what sticks out in my head a lot is, what am I doing? How am I doing this with somebody? Is when he goes to Lois Wilson and she says to him, after 5 months of being sober, whatever it is, and he's complaining nobody else is getting sober, and he's about to give up, and Lois says, Bill, you're sober. When was the last time you were 5.5 months sober? And it hits him that by him working with others, he's been able to stay sober. And then he visits Silkworth. And Silkworth gives him the second punch. He says, Bill, stop preaching. Talk about your drinking and the allergy and what it does to you. Get them to hook them in. Then you can talk about the spiritual stuff all you want. And not too long after that, Bill's in Akron with a business thing that fails. And he ends up talking to Dr. Bob right after those two conversations. And he knows how to talk to him. And if he hadn't talked to him like that, I don't know if we'd be sitting here right now. I often also think about when Bill Wilson has his experience in his third or fourth time, whatever, I've heard both in our history, in Towns Hospital, the final time, let's say that, that he has this amazing, euphoric this experience. And I'm like Bill, like I'm a feeling guy. You know, I like to feel good. And Bill has this experience. And yet, not too long or the next day after that, the thought comes across Bill, what about the thousands of alcoholics that I can give this to? And thus them giving to others. And it's amazing to me that Bill doesn't go and back into meditation or try to keep having this experience where he's just feeling so good. The thought comes to him to go help other alcoholics, and he rushes out and tries to help all the alcoholics he can. And that's been my experience. You know, that's what drives me. You know, I've been freed, and my job is to go back and enjoy sitting down with somebody. And walking with them through this process and hoping that maybe there's a chance that they will recover, that they will become free, that the God comes alive in them, or maybe not now, maybe down the road they will, but I at least did my job and showed up. I'm going to tell a story about what I think Alcoholics Anonymous is all about for me. Is a few years ago, I'm in my home group, and I'm in a noon meeting, and this guy's sharing, he's got 8 months sober, and he wants to drink, and he's talking about it, and I heard what he said, and I went up to him and I said, hey, what I heard what you're saying, I have an answer for you if you want it. Here's my number. He had to leave. I said, here's my number. Call me. We have a meeting Monday night. Please call me. You know, and he calls me Monday and he says, Scott, you didn't think I was going to call you, did you? And I said, I wasn't sure, but I'm glad you did. He said, I want to go to that meeting you were talking about. I said, I'll pick you up. And I pick him up. I take him to the meeting, and we have about 150 people come. It's right out of the book. We do a step a week out of the big book. Been doing it for years. We have a great guy that comes in and does it. And I see his eyes lighting up, and he's moving around his chair. And everyone comes up and shakes his hand. After, on the way home, he says, that was amazing. Where was that? I said, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. We're talking about the big book. He said, will you be my sponsor? I said, I'd be honored to, Hayward. And he tells me he almost drank over the weekend. He was this close from drinking. I was going to start the steps with him on Wednesday. I said, why don't we meet tomorrow at noon? We'll start the steps. He says, all right. Comes in noon, the noon meeting. Sees me. We sit through the meeting. We go out to lunch. Tells me his whole life story at lunch. This guy's been through so much. Abused, trauma, everything. I've never been through that kind of stuff. And after lunch, I buy him lunch. He can't believe I bought him lunch. He said, no one ever bought me lunch, Scott. I said, it's not a big deal. It's a cheeseburger, fries. I took him to my home. And, you know, I gave him a little history. At that time in my sobriety, it probably took me 2 hours to do 1, 2, and 3. I've since changed. That's just me. And I gave him a little history. And we went through the first, you know, we're trying to go through the first few steps. He can't admit he's powerless. And he keeps wanting to talk to me about his life, and I listen to him, and I'm letting him tell me these things, and I'm talking to him, and I'm directing him back to the book, and he can't see his powers. At one point in there, he says, that reminds me of this poem called If. And he kept saying, yours will be the world, and everything's in, but what's more, you'll be a man, my son. And I never heard of this poem. I go ahead and I Google it. It's a beautiful poem by Kipling. After about 4 or 5 hours, he can't admit his powers. I had a big book study to get to that night, and he couldn't go. I had to get him home, and on the way home, I give him another analogy, and he says, I see it, I'm powerless. I see it. So we start talking more about God. We talked a little bit about it in my house. And we talk about the steps 2 and 3, and he says, Scott, how can I be a God when all this horrible stuff has happened to me? And I said, well, maybe this, or maybe that, maybe that's not God, maybe it's people's self-will. And he said, okay, maybe. And I saw him smiling, and we pulled up to his front door, and I gave him my big book. And he goes up to his front door, and he yells out, "Scott." And I turned around, and he said, "Thanks." And I went, "You're welcome, bud." And he goes in the house, and the next day I got a call from his roommate. He said, "Scott Haywood passed away in his sleep last night. He died of cardiac arrest. 46-year-old man." He said, "I got to tell you something, Scott. I have been living with this guy for 12 years. I have never seen him this happy. He came bouncing in these doors last night talking about how he loves his sponsor. He loves the group he's a part of now. He wants to go to the, can't wait to go to the B.B. King concert with you because I invited him to that." He said, "I have your big book. I want to give it back to you." Now, a tear went down my cheek because I wanted this guy to experience what we're doing here, to come alive and to live fully and freely. And another tear came down my cheek because I realized the gift I'd been given, that in the last hours of this man's life, I got to be kind to him. I got to buy him a meal. I got to listen to him. I had a chance to bring him into my home, and I got a chance to surrender with him and talk about God with him. And I called my sponsor right away, and I said, "John, I want to thank you for telling me the truth about Alcoholics Anonymous and about alcoholism." Because when I was in that meeting, he was struggling. I could have easily said, "Don't drink," or "Keep it green," or I could have said a variety of these slogans, and I could have turned my back and went about my busy life, because my life is busy. But AA and my sponsor gave me something more than that. They gave me something real to offer this man. And I went up to him, and I said, "John, thank you for that." And John says, "Scott, I don't know if you're ever going to have a more powerful experience than that. You're exactly what that man needed to go on from here." And a few months later, I'm in a Vegas convention and in the Riviera, and there's a woman speaker, and the last thing she said was, "I used to think the way to live life was I should live it like it's my last day on earth, and I don't think that anymore. I think I should live life every day like it's your last day on earth." And to me, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is trying to do with a guy like me who's a taker my whole life, never cared about you. It's, what can I get out of life? What can I get out of you? How does it make me feel? And it's trying to turn me around. And not for this reason or this motive, but what it's trying to do is turn me around to be a giver and to think about you, or sit and see what your needs are, or listen to you, or be kind to you. And in that, I find that I couldn't be more happy or more joyous or more free. And that if poem that he gave me has helped me more and comforted me more in the trials and tribulations of my life in the last 10 years of being sober than anything. And the storms of life did show up for me. About five things hit me in a 2-year span, three big things, and then two things rocked me at once about a year and a half ago. I had a broken heart, and a guy that worked for me for 4 years, it was my brother, robbed me of $150,000 and caused my business probably about $250,000. And I didn't think I could pick up the pieces and move forward. And if I could, I didn't know if I wanted to. I had to rebuild this business before, and rebuilding is not fun. And I can tell you that I was in a fetal position for 2 days straight. I couldn't move. And I allowed my friends to carry me out of that, and I allowed my sponsor and my family to carry me, and I learned a lot about our traditions in that. With practical experience with him. And here's the thing, that there's a guy that's in my life that's probably my best friend now, that's sober exactly the length of time when those two things rocked me. And he came into my life and asked me to sponsor him right when this happened. And he had been in and out of AA for 7 years and never could stay longer than a month or two. And because of that, I got to spend all day with him for a year and a half, and we became, you know, I got to walk with him through, you know, and take these 12 steps. And I remember thinking, man, you know, like, I'm exactly what he, like, he needed. Like, if that didn't happen, if I didn't have to walk away from that girl, and that money hadn't been taken from me, he wouldn't have really had my attention like he needed me. But more recently, I realized how much I needed him. How much I needed him. See, I need you. Without you, there is no me. And in the trench, one alcoholic sitting with another is where I feel most comfortable in life. My whole life makes sense because of it. I love Alcoholics Anonymous with all my heart. It's a year and a half since that's happened. That business is doing better than it ever has done. I kept my feet moving in here, and at times it was tough to come into AA and sit with guys or show up in AA, which I love and feel comfortable and feel kind of not comfortable. Hurting in AA was not comfortable for me. But I showed up and moved my feet. And it didn't matter what the business went away or not, or it didn't matter. But I showed up here. And what has happened as a result of showing up here and moving my feet, the same as I do when I'm on top of a mountain traveling the world with an abundant light, where I'm in a valley in the darkness, and I really don't learn anything on the mountain. I learn in the dark, in the valley, you know. And what happened for me was, on the other side of all that, I have more to offer now. And guys have showed up in my office in this last year and a half. It's not just the guy with the 18 months. It's other men who have showed up. And I know that God hooked us up. I know that if I hadn't gone through what I went through, he would not be sitting in front of me right now. And in that, I find meaning. And my life is unbelievable. A year and a half later, I was able to forgive that guy instantly that robbed me. And I haven't thought about him since. If he walked through here, I'd shake his hand. I hope he's doing well. I wouldn't let him near any money that has been given to me. But I was able to forgive him in the moment and have compassion and think how horrible he must be to have to live with that. And that business, like I said, is doing better than ever. And the people that I love and work with me now would not have been here if he hadn't left with that money. It's unbelievable how it works. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love, and I've been trying to keep this.